Alrighty, football fans, how you guys doing out there? Bill Rossetti hit you guys back up as always. It's another edition of GG. And as always, my buddy Ian Wharton, riding co-pilot with me. What's going on, brother?
Man, all is well. It's middle of winter, and we're starting to get some snow up here in Northern Virginia, which is pretty crazy. But, you know, things are good. This time of year is the best for evaluating prospects since we're snowed in anyways. So I'm excited. I'm disappointed that I don't believe either of us are going to the Senior Bowl next week. But we will have a special treat for folks listening to us, as we're going to have a special guest next week, just as a little teaser, and to report from the Senior Bowl. And so outside of the disappointment of not going there, but things are really good, though, outside of that.
Absolutely, yeah. For you fans listening on the East Coast, stay safe this weekend if and when you get a boatload of snow. I'm not supposed to get hit till this weekend, so still kind of hanging in there. The calm before the storm, as they like to say. Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to make it to the Super Bowl, definitely not going to the Super Bowl. Not going to be able to make it to the Senior Bowl this year, but hopefully next year. So hopefully save a little bit of money this year, get a flight down, see what happens, and meet everybody next year. But yeah, like Ian said, we'll have someone on to talk Senior Bowl next week, so stay tuned, be on the lookout for that. For this week, of course, though, got a lot to cover. More coaches got hired, the coaching carousel is coming to an end. But first, we'll kind of flip like what we did last week. We'll talk about the games first. Divisional weekend is in the books. Man, can you believe it's championship week already, Ian? We're down to the final four.
Yeah, and I mean, what a final four it is. I mean,
yeah,
we've got, you know, three of the best quarterbacks in the NFL right now. And then the other guy's not really a slouch either, Peyton Manning. I mean, obviously Manning hasn't been that guy that we grew up with, but you know, I'm still not ready to. I mean, I'm ready to say that he's close to the end, but I'm not going to write him off. I would not be surprised if he plays at least a decent game this weekend, and I hope he does. I mean, like we said at the beginning of the year, I would really hate to see him have a bad year, just considering what he's meant for the NFL and and you know, our generation of football fans. He's been, you know, one of the most popular players by far. So I'm really excited. I'm not, obviously not a Patriots fan, so I'm hoping the Patriots lose. That's my only bias. The rest of it, I'm just rooting for good football, and I think the NFC side may have a very special bracket. Even to this point, I think that we've seen some great things from the NFC side.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely shaping up to be a fun Final Four. So we'll start with the AFC side. We'll start with Saturday's action, which saw New England knock off Kansas City. So my pick to win the AFC, of course, got bounced. But boy, New England showing why they're still the top dogs out there. Brady just picking apart that Chiefs defense, just playing outstanding. Kansas City kind of struggled a little bit, but yeah, it's also credit to how good the Patriots' defense was. And then, of course, all the talk was how slow the Chiefs were late in the game when they were down by two possessions, needing to score. But funnily enough, today, during his introductory press conference, Doug Peterson actually kind of explained why the Chiefs were moving slow, saying they didn't want to give the ball back to Tom Brady. Of course, on the flip side of that, I mean, the more time you spend on the first possession, the less time you have on the second possession. You know, the whole, you weren't going to want to give the ball back to Brady anyway because you're pretty much going to lose. But it was definitely a little frustrating to watch the end of that game, watching how slow they moved. But boy, there's no doubt the Patriots look like the favorite, at least in the AFC. I think, you know, either NFC team could give these teams are running for their money, but probably a lot of people are going to look at the Patriots right now as the favorite to repeat as Super Bowl champs.
I think the most impressive part from their game, excuse me, is that the offense really kind of came back together. I mean, they squandered a couple opportunities to score. You know, they were kind of moving the ball surprisingly well against a really good defense. But it turns out that maybe they were just kind of playing coy in the last couple weeks and, you know, obviously resting their guys, not being very aggressive with their game plans. Because with a healthy Julian Edelman and a healthy Rob Gronkowski, at least, you know, more healthy than what they were, that looked like a legitimate offense. That looked like a scary offense. It looked like someone that I wouldn't want to play. And that's not really who we had seen the last couple weeks of the year. So, you know, maybe it was just that week. Yeah, I'm not willing to write off what we saw for multiple weeks yet. But, I mean, that is really impressive performance against a defense that, you know, they were basically missing their best pass rusher and best really player, Justin Houston. He only played, I think, like 10 snaps or something like that. So they're going to have to face, you know, a similarly very, very good defense in Denver. But question is for Denver, can they withstand the loss of Chris Harris? With Chris Harris's game status in question, that's a huge, huge question for them. Very similar to missing Justin Houston for the Chiefs. So I think it's going to be a pretty good game. The thing is for the Broncos, is they probably can't score more than 20 points this game. And with the Patriots, for me, what's hard to say is to beat the Patriots, I feel like you need to score almost 30 to give yourself a great chance. So maybe some weird stuff happens, kind of like that Philadelphia game. Maybe Denver can rip off a punt return or a kick return for touchdown, maybe like a pick six. And all of a sudden, if they can do one or both of those, then maybe we're looking at a much better game. I think it'll be a good game. I'm not sold that this will be a maybe that close of a game, but I'm definitely hopeful that it will be.
Yeah, because, you know, going to the other AFC game, which saw Denver come from behind to defeat Pittsburgh, Peyton certainly hasn't looked his best, and, you know, if the offense moves like that or Peyton plays like that on Sunday, it could be a long day for the Broncos. You're right. I think this offense really has to try to put up some points, or at least the defense really has to play outstanding. You know, obviously the defense played very well. You know, Von Miller, still one of the top dogs, and is actually going to get a chance now to play in a championship game. After missing 2 years ago with that torn ACL. With Chris Harris out, certainly Aqib Talib's going to have to step up. It'll be interesting to see who he lines up against, if, you know, he shadows anybody, unless he just stays to, excuse me, to one side. But, you know, it was encouraging a little bit, too, for Denver to see the run game get a little bit of a spark. You saw C.J. Anderson broke out a couple good runs, which you didn't really see a lot of this year. He was a bit of a disappointment. Luckily for the Broncos, Ronnie Hillman was able to step up and produce a little bit, but Anderson got some good runs in there. But, you know, for a while it looked like Pittsburgh was going to win it. They had the lead for a while, and of course late in the game they have the ball in Denver territory. You figure they're probably going to at least score a field goal and almost salt the game away. But then that fumble by Toussaint turned out to be a real killer. As Peyton just drove the field afterwards and led them to a touchdown. They got the two-point conversion. And that was pretty much all she wrote for the Steelers, who definitely had a good run and certainly a bittersweet ending. You know, and obviously, you know, the talk is going to be, well, they didn't have Antonio Brown, they didn't have D'Angelo Williams, but certainly Big Ben looked very good. I mean, I was worried about how he was going to be able to throw the ball, you know, as when we saw how limited he was against the Bengals after coming back from that injury, and he throws a deep pass first play of the game, so it's like, okay, I guess his arm's fine, but you know, things happen, and you know, injuries are going to happen, and you got to roll well with what you got, and they made it a lot closer than certainly what I expected. And unfortunately, they came up short, and now it's on to 2016, I guess, for the Steelers, and on to the AFC title game for the Broncos. So it should be an interesting game, but right now I just feel like New England might be a little too much for Denver. You know, as you mentioned, they're pretty much healthy now, with Gronk back, obviously, Edelman. You know, a lot of the key players that they didn't have in that first game against Denver are going to be in this game. So, for me, I just feel like the Patriots right now are the better team, and they, in my opinion, should win this game and get back to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think we're looking at maybe like a 10-point game here for New England. You know, and it's not ideal. It's really not. As far as like a fan, but I just think that if you look at the matchup, and that's all we can really do here is we can just play matchups. I think that it's going to bear out that the Patriots are just quite simply the better team.
I mean, obviously, if there's any advantage for the Broncos is that they do have this game at home, you know, kind of in part by that win over New England. I mean, they ended up a three-way tie with the Bengals, but the Broncos still ended up with the better conference. Actually, no, it goes to head-to-head sweep. I'm sorry, that was the tiebreaker. It was head-to-head sweep because they beat both New England and Cincinnati. So at least they have that going for them. They'll have the home crowd. You know, not like weather's going to be much of a factor. Brady's used to playing in cold weather, but you never know. Maybe they'll get some of that home magic, and Peyton can find some kind of mojo and make a bit of a run, and we'll see what happens. It certainly would be really nice, though, and really fitting to see Peyton Manning win the Super Bowl and ride off into the sunset, kind of like what we saw with Jerome Bettis about 10 years ago. That'd be really nice to see, I think, for kind of our generation, to see a guy we've pretty much idolized growing up get to go out on top.
Yeah, that would be really, really fun ending. I do hesitate, though, because I do think that either NFC team that makes it, I think will, personally, I think will be the favorite in the Super Bowl, and I think we'll end up seeing them end up as a winner. But we'll see, though. I mean, it kind of just depends, too. I mean, you know, you never know exactly how it's going to bear out. Things change definitely on the weekly basis, so mm-hmm. You know, we could end up seeing that change very quickly.
Let's shift over now to the NFC, which certainly was no shortage for drama during the weekend. One game started off ugly, got very interesting. The other game was pretty close throughout, and it just became an absolute classic at the end. We'll start with the Saturday night game between the Packers and the Cardinals. And the Cardinals end up winning a thriller in overtime. Boy, what a finish to that game. Particularly that last drive of regulation. Rodgers essentially hits two Hail Marys on that last drive to score the touchdown. And what a coming out party for Jeff Janis. I know there's certain people on Twitter that were very excited about this game. I'm not going to mention any names, but I think if you've followed Twitter enough, I think you have an idea, namely which one person I'm referring to. But that was just an intense drive. The one thing that was like, I mean, I guess this is hindsight talking too, but, you know, pressuring Aaron Rodgers, you know, I understand the plan behind that, but I mean, you've seen Rodgers work his magic many times, and to only have, I don't know, what they have, like two or three people in the end zone on that last play, it was almost like asking for trouble. And, you know, Rodgers, of course, hits the Hail Mary again. They get the extra point, tie the game, send it to overtime. And then, of course, the coin flip debacle. And I'm thinking, how does a coin not – how do you not get a coin to flip? It's like
– right.
It's not that hard. And, oh, yeah. By the way, the guy that Did that coin flip Cleet Blakeman is your Super Bowl referee this year?
Yeah, it was such a strange scenario. I mean, it's just like I don't understand how these guys don't seem to understand the rules, like how stuff gets mixed up like that. And I know it's not often that we see that, but still, it's just another bad look for the NFL. Mm-hmm.
So the coin doesn't flip. They end up redoing the coin flip, which they said Blakeman didn't have to do, but he did. Arizona ends up getting the ball first, and what a play by Larry Fitzgerald. What a play by Carson Palmer, scrambling out of pressure, rolling around, hits Fitzgerald wide open, and Fitzy almost takes it all the way. And then a couple plays later, shovel pass to, of course, Larry Fitzgerald to score the touchdown, win the game, and send the Cardinals to the NFC Championship game. Boy, what a rush those last few minutes were. What a game. It's almost like the Packers and Cardinals just know how to have an exciting playoff game against each other. You know, we mentioned that overtime game from a few years ago. This one, you know, with less than half the points scored, I think was maybe even more entertaining than that 51-45 game from a few years ago.
Yeah, I mean, Hail Mary, huge play by Larry Fitzgerald, who's one of the most likable people anyways,
yes,
in the NFL.
Larry Fitzgerald fan myself, absolutely.
Yeah, just incredible. Like that, it was like I was literally standing up when that happened, when Carson Palmer was bouncing around, when he found Fitzgerald wide open, I stood up. And I just started cheering for him. I mean, I have no rooting interest in the game. I like both teams that were playing. I mean, I really enjoy watching both teams. And I'm just cheering them on. I mean, same thing happened with Rodgers when Rodgers threw the touchdown. And I'm not even a Jeff Janis fan. I like Aaron Rodgers. I mean, I was just enjoying the game. I was like, you know, I just couldn't help myself. I was just like, oh my goodness, like this is fantastic football to mm-hmm. watch. So I'm really happy because I tend to be disappointed with playoff games in general. I think some of them tend to lack, lack that luster. But we have definitely not been disappointed so far this year. I think that it's really setting up for potentially a fantastic round of conference games here to finish up.
Mm-hmm. And then the Sunday game, like I said, started off ugly, but Russell Wilson certainly will not die. Panthers jumped out to a 31-0 lead. I'm like, really? Like it was just crazy. Like, I mean, I was out at the beginning of the game, so I was kind of following on Twitter a little bit, and I saw it was already, even early on, I saw it was like 14-0. I'm like, wow, it's 14-0 Carolina. And then it grew to 31-0. It's like, oh my goodness. But then Seattle found their mojo, and crawled their way back, but in the end it was just too big of a hole for them to dig themselves out of. But credit them for making it a game, and after a sluggish first half, Russell Wilson definitely played a lot better. But hey, credit the Panthers, you know, they, and I apologize for being skeptical. You know, I've been down on them seemingly all year. I was still a bit skeptical going in, but boy, they're certainly proving a lot of people wrong now. That was you could certainly say they were a bit lackadaisical in the second half, nearly blowing that 31-point lead, but they held together when they needed to. And I also found it very fitting that it was Thomas Davis who recovered the onside kick to seal the game. I mean, what a story Thomas Davis has been, you know, even if you simply just point to the three ACL tears that he suffered, and to come back and play at the level that he's played at is just remarkable. You know, and he's clearly one of the reasons, him and Luke Kuechly, you know, the middle of that defense is why the Panthers are so good, those two. And then you've got stud defensive tackles in Kawan Short and Star Lotulelei. Obviously, Josh Norman had another good game and has played well all season. So, This is going to be a really, really good NFC Championship game. I'm really excited to watch the Cardinals go up against the Panthers. This is going to be really fun. I think, you know, seeing Norman probably against maybe Floyd, or I'd like to see him go up against Fitzgerald a couple times. That'd be fun. David Johnson against that defense. And just like we talked about last week, you know, that this possibility could happen that we're now either going to see Carson Palmer or Cam Newton playing in the Super Bowl. You know, either Cam Newton kind of completes his rise to a top-tier quarterback and finally proves all his doubters wrong that he couldn't mature into a top quarterback, or we see Carson Palmer complete his comeback story from a torn ACL. For one thing, there's no doubt, I think, that you're probably looking at the top two candidates for MVP in this game, and Newton and Palmer. Newton's probably going to get it just because the Panthers went 15-1, and deservedly so. But if you had to vote for second MVP, you got to go with Palmer. So this is going to be a really fun game. And, you know, being the Sunday night game, a lot of people are going to get to watch it, so it's going to be fun. You know, for those that haven't seen either of these two teams play much, I think you're in for a real treat here.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm with you here, and I think that Newton will win it. I agree with you there, and I'm just really interested to see. I heard this from someone, and I thought that they had a good point, actually, that what do we think about, or how are we going to feel about Carson Palmer in the event that he comes up and struggles for whatever reason? If he struggles in this game, is our opinion different on him? And the reason why I ask that is this is a guy, he hasn't been in many big games in his career. Now, he's playing fantastic football, and he played fantastic football this entire season. But that was kind of an interesting thing that I heard, because they had a good point. I mean, this is a guy, he's playing the best football of his career now. What do you think about that? I mean, is that going to be something that you kind of take into consideration here? If he, let's say he goes out and has a, you know, maybe like a poor afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly wasn't perfect against Green Bay. I mean, there was a couple
throws. He may have had like four or five dropped interceptions.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple throws deep in the red zone. Like that one interception, what was it, late third or fourth quarter or something like that. I forget exactly when in the game. But that one kind of faded throw into the end zone that got picked off was just absolutely terrible. And you were starting to get the sense that, you know, maybe this is starting to slip away from Arizona. But I wouldn't say if he has a poor game that it's, you know, all of a sudden going to crush our opinion on him. He's still an outstanding quarterback. If Palmer's going to have a bad game this week, it's probably going to be due to the fact that he's going up against such a good defense.
Yeah.
You know, be it Kuechly going after him or Davis or whatnot, you know, because it's obviously a tough matchup. First of all, this is the first time he's ever going to play a road playoff game. And again, he's going up against a top-notch defense. So he's entering a situation that he's not familiar with. So if he has a bad game, you can make a case for it. You could make it understandable. And again, I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, if he has a poor game, then I think all of a sudden he's a bad quarterback just because of one game. It just so happened that, you know, he's up against a strong team with such high stakes.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I thought it was an interesting point. And I'm a fan of Palmer. I think what he and Bruce Arians together have done is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really excited for that NFC game. Honestly, I wish that was the Super Bowl. just because I like both those teams more than I like the AFC teams, because in general I kind of root for new teams.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like seeing New England in it every year, and I don't like seeing Denver in it quite often. I mean, that team's won a couple Super Bowls in their recent past. You know, I want to see some new teams in there and winning these big games. And so I'm definitely rooting for the NFC here this – I shouldn't say really this week. I mean, I hope it's a great game on both sides, but really in the Super Bowl, I'm going to be rooting for the NFC for that reason. But I'm with you here. I don't think that we should drastically change our opinion on Palmer, because he had a wonderful regular season.
Yeah, and again, like I said, if it wasn't for Cam Newton, I think you could absolutely make the case for Carson Palmer as MVP. I mean, just look at last season. Palmer goes down. I mean, Drew Stanton kind of held that ship as best he could, but you just got the sense that once Palmer went down, the Cardinals season just sank immediately. Now here he is, back healthy, and, you know, there's a reason the Cardinals went, 13-3 in the regular season and just beat Aaron Rodgers and the Packers in the playoffs. So, but I agree. I think... And I kind of feel whoever wins the NFC, I think could win the Super Bowl. You know, and I said when the playoffs started, I picked Arizona to win the Super Bowl. I'm going to stick with that. You know, I know it sounds like I'm still down on Carolina, but it's not as much I'm down on Carolina. It's just I really like this Cardinals team right now.
Yeah.
They've really grown on me. You know, I remember, and obviously this is a completely different opinion of what I had preseason. I'm sitting here talking about them as probably an 8-8 team because I thought talent wise they got worse. Well, I guess I forgot the fact that, oh hey, Palmer's still a good quarterback, Bruce Arians is still a great coach, and the defense is playing a lot better than they did last year. You know, Patrick Peterson is having a bounce back season, and a bunch of other players on that in that secondary playing well. Dan Buchanan has played well. So I mean, this, to me, it feels like they're the most complete team in the NFL. I mean, at least a toss close to the Patriots, but I don't know. I just really – something just feels right with this Cardinals team.
Yeah.
Something just feels like this could be their year.
No, I agree. I actually wrote as much in my conference playoff championship article. I said, you know, this team just feels like it's like a team of destiny. And, you know, that Larry Fitzgerald play really – was incredible. And it's just like, it's one of those moments where it's like, it's hard to deny that this team is maybe that team.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm with you though. I mean, it's hard to sit there and continue to say that the Panthers won't do this or that, but the Cardinals are just so deep on offense. It's really difficult to pick against that.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like, yeah, I'm going to use a NASCAR reference here, so sorry, folks. If you don't like NASCAR, you could skip ahead if you want. But it feels like last season in NASCAR with Kyle Busch, you know, started off with the injury, missed almost half the season, came back, and just went on an absolute tear. And, you know, looking back, you can kind of see that stretch he had of 4 straight wins kind of be the building block that he had going into the chase, and then making a run through the playoffs and eventually winning the title. This Cardinals team kind of feels like it has that similar sense. They're building momentum. It feels like they're peaking at the right time. You know, they have, I think they have the firepower to carry this all the way through. And, you know, if they get there, they'll certainly have a bit of home crowd advantage, because Arizona's not too far, you know, in terms of, like, you know, NFL geography. Arizona's not too far from San Francisco, so you know they're going to have a lot of fans backing them in the Super Bowl. So, and you know, if they get back to the Super Bowl, Larry Fitzgerald will be just drooling to get that title, because we know 7 years ago when they were the Super Bowl, how close they came. And it was Fitzgerald that scored the go-ahead touchdown late in the game before the Big Ben drive to Santonio Holmes. So, you know Larry's going to want this one really bad because, I mean, for as good as he is right now, how many more opportunities is he going to get, you know, at his age and, you know, the amount of good teams in the NFL right now? So this really feels, I think, like his best shot remaining.
Definitely. I think we're going to see some I think we're going to see some special things here from him, especially with such a big matchup. I really, really hope that it's going to be some magic that happens, especially from the playmakers, you know. So sometimes you get like those random guys that play really well, and that's exciting too. I mean, you always like the unlikely hero, but mm-hmm. I like it too when like the superstars just come out and just, you know, light things up.
Yeah. So it sounds like we're in agreement that'll be Cardinals Patriots.
Yeah, unfortunately.
There you go. let's go back quick too, because, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk about this last week, so we'll kind of squeeze this in here. I want to go back and get your thoughts on the national title game from last week too, between Alabama and Clemson. That turned out to be a real barn burner as well. 45-40 the final. Alabama once again the kings of college football. And it was interesting too, all the rumors that maybe Nick Saban was going to maybe test the NFL waters again. Obviously now that's not going to happen. All the coaching jobs are filled. So he's still there at Bama, but what do you think? How was the game for you that night?
You know, I'm not a Bama fan. I like teams that don't win regularly. It was a heck of a game though. I mean, you really can't complain about the, you know, what it took to, for them to win. I mean, it took an onside kick and, special teams play, you know, that type of stuff is, you know, that's why winners win. I mean, those small little plays come up every once in a while and, you know, those are the things that matter, yeah, especially in those big moments. So, you know, good for them. Obviously, I don't root for Nick Saban, but he's an amazing, amazing coach, mm-hmm. and that can never be taken from him. So, you know, congrats to them. Congrats to Bama. I really wish Clemson would have won. I thought Deshaun Watson was fantastic. Really looking forward to see how he plays as a junior. Next season, he'll be draft eligible. So,
yeah.
But overall, my takes were it was a fun game to watch. I really just tried to sit back and enjoy it, and looking forward to see how Bama reloads next year. And I think next year will be a stronger pool in general.
Real quick, I'm just curious. Do you have Deshaun Watson? I mean, you probably haven't done much work on the 2017 draft, but, you know, seeing what you've seen so far, would you say Watson's the top quarterback right now for the 2017 draft?
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. I think he is by far and away the best candidate for next year to be like the number one pick and quarterback number one. There's some interesting guys, but overall I think he is definitely the best I've seen.
And just in terms of teams for next season, who look like some of the top dogs going into next year? Probably Alabama, I'm sure, is going to be up there as usual.
Yeah. I'm going to have Bama number one, I'm going to have Clemson number one, and I probably have Bama sitting at number two. And only reason I say that is because basically Bama's going to be losing a lot more. If you look at it, they're losing their starting quarterback, their top two running backs, a lot of defensive talent, and they're just going to reload. They've got a lot of talent on both sides of the ball, and they're going to be just fine. But I think Clemson, obviously with Watson coming back, that's a huge part. They're going to be losing a lot of defensive talent, but I think that talent is easier to replace in the grand scheme of things. So I'll go Clemson 1, Bama 2. To be honest with you, I'm not too sure after that. I'm really not too sure after that. It's really difficult to kind of get a feel for it. I'd say maybe Notre Dame Notre Dame would probably be like that team that I would look at as number three. And then after that, it's a wild race.
How about your Buckeyes? What's their outlook for next season?
They got a lot of rebuilding to do, a lot of reloading. It's gonna be a lot of young guys playing. I think they'll end up as a top 10 team. They'll probably lose one, maybe two total. It's just gonna be different for them. It's a transition period. A lot of good young players, I'm sure, will be playing, but it'll also be a lot of growing pains as well. So. Yeah. I'm optimistic, but, you know, there's not many expectations, and sometimes that's actually not a bad thing.
Yeah, well, new quarterback for one.
Yep.
Who's the early favorite to possibly be the starter?
Well, quarterback will be JT Barrett.
Barrett will still be there. For some reason I thought he was leaving, but I guess not.
No, it'll be JT Barrett.
So at least...
it'll be new running backs, new wide receivers. A couple new linemen.
Pretty much new everywhere else. So
yeah, a lot of new defense. So plenty of changes elsewhere.
Yeah. Well, it should be interesting. And then we'll see how my Nittany Lions do next season. Obviously, Hackenberg's gone. No surprise. And Geno Lewis is transferring, which was a bit of a surprise to me. And it's kind of upsetting, too, because Geno Lewis is fairly local to where I am. He actually played his high school ball about half an hour north of where I live, so that's why it was always fun to watch him. And he played quarterback in high school, and, you know, obviously everyone knows him as a receiver. I still remember him as Eugene Lewis. we've discussed this before. Everyone knows him as Geno Lewis. I still remember when he was Eugene at Wyoming Valley West, but he's now at Oklahoma. They had a running back that also transferred as well, but they figured he was going to be playing behind Barkley anyway. So, but to have Barkley back next season certainly is going to help. And, of course, certainly losing some talent on the defensive side of the ball. Guys like Zettel gone, Anthony Johnson, Jordan Lucas. So it'll be interesting to see how they reload there. Let's go back to the NFL. We'll talk about the rest of the coaching hires from the past week. We'll start in Philadelphia. Doug Peterson, Chiefs offensive coordinator, now the guy in Philly. Certainly not the sexy hire that a lot of Eagles fans wanted. But, you know, it's not a terrible hire. You know, you give the guy a shot. And, I think an early positive on Peterson so far is the staff that he's putting together. He's bringing in Frank Reich as offensive coordinator, and he's bringing in Jim Schwartz as defensive coordinator. I really like the Schwartz hire because we've seen how well he's done with defenses in the past, namely the Bills of 2014, and then he's done well with the Lions as well. And, of course, he has the head coaching experience, so he can kind of help Peterson in that aspect. So, and he hasn't committed to it yet, but Schwartz is likely going to switch the defense back to a 4-3, which I think really, really works well because a lot of the players on this team are built for a 4-3 scheme, namely Fletcher Cox. I think Cox as a 3 tech can be outstanding. You know, he could, he might be up there with guys like Aaron Donald and Geno Atkins at that position. I think Cox has that much potential and can be that talented as a 3 tech. There's talk that Kiko Alonso will play weak side backer, which
it's a good fit.
What's that?
Yeah, it's a good fit.
Yeah, it's worked well for Schwartz in the past. Guys like Nigel Bradham has performed well. So I think it's an interest. That's a good hire. And then Frank Reich, you know, he obviously took a little bit of beef last season, but I mean, San Diego was just riddled with injuries. You know, the offensive line was like a carousel. They didn't have Keenan Allen. The run game struggled. You know, Melvin Gordon didn't do much as a rookie and obviously couldn't even do much on third down because he can't catch the ball yet. So, but You know, I'm optimistic. You know, I'm obviously not going to downplay the hire. I mean, it's early. You know, he's only been coached for a couple days. Let's see how he does in free agency and the draft and obviously in the games. But I think there's a reason to at least be optimistic, you know, and not shoot down the hire right away.
No, I agree. I mean, I didn't think the choice of Peterson himself was overly strong. But I do like the staff that he's bringing. I think that itself is pretty strong, and I think that there's reason for optimism, if for no other reason, because of the staff he's bringing. And really interested to see how it works out. I mean, I'm a big Chip Kelly fan, but, you know, obviously there was time for a change, and I think it might work out. I mean, I'm really interested to see Reich. He's a very high-regarded person, and he was fired only after 1 year, which is really strange to me whenever that happens. So we'll see how it works out. But, you know, you never really know until you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even guys like John D. Well, it's not officially yet, but John D. Filippo.
Yeah, that's a great hire.
Yeah, it sounds like he's going to be the quarterback's coach. And, you know, for the people out there, they're like, oh, well, he was with the Browns. He stinks. Just remember,
he did really good work.
No one knew who Gary Barnidge was before this season.
Yeah, he did good work with Manziel. So
yeah,
that's a solid hire. I'm really a fan of that one.
Absolutely. Speaking of Chip Kelly, I was actually really surprised when I learned that he was hired by the 49ers, because I didn't think Chip Kelly was going to get. First of all, I felt it was going to be tough for him to get a second chance. Period. But for him to get a second chance so quickly was really surprising. But it's interesting because, of course, you know, all the talk was, oh, maybe when Chip Kelly was still coach of the Eagles, all the rumors were, oh, maybe Kaepernick will go to the Eagles and, you know, pair with Chip Kelly and it'll work out for him. Well, now everybody's got their wish that Kelly's paired with Kaepernick. It's just Chip Kelly goes back to the West Coast. But it's going to be really interesting to see how Chip deals with the big ego himself, Trent Baalke.
Yeah.
I think those are certainly two power-hungry individuals that are probably going to butt heads a time or two while Kelly's there. So it should be a fun show there.
Yeah, you're not kidding. I mean, you know, I'm just interested to see what he does with Kaepernick. I personally don't think that that's the best fit for his system, but he may go back to more of like an Oregon-based system than what he's used in the NFL. In the NFL, he's kind of been more about accuracy, precision, kind of things that really translate better than the running style and read option aspect of things. But I'm interested to see what he can come up with. I'm really interested to see if he can coexist with Trent Baalke, who's an idiot. I mean, just everything about that guy is extremely negative that comes out about him. So we'll see how it works out. I hope Kelly succeeds. I really hope he takes Jared Goff, because I think he and Jared Goff would be fantastic together. But we'll see if that works out, and we'll see if he rolls with Kaepernick. Because if he rolls with Kaepernick, I don't think he'll be in the NFL for much more than maybe a few years, unless if he can dump Kaepernick in the next year or two.
And for those curious, no, the Eagles and 49ers do not meet in 2016, but they do meet in Philadelphia in 2017. That, of course, is assuming Kelly's still around in 2017, and if he is, that's going to be an interesting return to Philly, whenever that may be. Who else we got? Tampa Bay hired Dirk Cutter, which could have been seen from a mile away. it seemed like from the very beginning, it felt like once they fired Lovie Smith, you know, looking back on it, it's almost like they had their eyes set on Cutter from the get-go. I think they hired interviewed a couple other people. I don't remember exactly who, but Cutter ends up being the guy. And continuity, we always talk about, is, you know, can be a good thing in the NFL, especially with a young quarterback. And you saw Jameis Winston performed well under Cutter's system. So, you know, now the Cutter's going to be the guy. You know, obviously not much of a change there. So I think this is a solid hire. You know, again, not a flashy, you know, sexy hire that everyone wants. But, you know, it's solid. At least it doesn't mean, you know, it's his second head coach, but at least Jameis Winston doesn't have to learn a completely new system in just his second year in the NFL. So in that sense, it's, you know, not a terrible hire by Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I mean, he had a lot of success with Jameis Winston last year, and so I like that aspect of it. From the aspect of firing Lovie Smith, again, I'm in favor of that. Wasn't a big Lovie Smith fan to begin with. I think he's been kind of overrated for the last few years. Although he did do successful things in Chicago, I think he was also part of the problem. So I respect that they moved on that quickly. I'm excited to see what Cutter can bring to the table. And this is a guy, he's had a lot of success everywhere he's been with offenses. So we'll see if he can turn his fortune into a good head coach from just a good offensive coordinator. Definitely interested to see how that works out. And I'm a Jameis Winston fan, so I hope that it does work out for Jameis, mm-hmm. for his sake at least.
And I was ready to talk about Ben McAdoo, but we already covered him last week because he had already been hired. So I think we saved the best for last, and that is the spectacular, amazing, great, astonishing hire of Mike Mularkey.
Yeah, I mean, unbelievable. That was an unbelievable hire. He was terrible. Absolutely terrible down the stretch with Tennessee. I don't understand that at all.
2-7, I believe.
Yeah, and like the team didn't play any better than Ken Wisenhunt when they had him. That made zero sense to keep him in house, and that should be an attractive job as a potential GM candidate.
Yeah,
I would love that job, even though the ownership situation is sticky, and I understand that. I would love that job because you have Marcus Mariota to build with. You have the number one pick. So you can get whoever you want in this draft. You can build the team however you want. It is crazy to me that they're going to walk away with this with Mike Mularkey, and they gave him a 3-year contract. That's it. Most of these head coaches get 4 or 5 year contracts. Usually it's 4 years. The power candidates get 5 years. And so what that tells me is they don't have faith in him. And it's like, then why did you hire him? They should have been able to draw a much more attractive head coach than Mike Mularkey.
And going back to the subject of continuity, you know, I'm sure the Titans thought, oh, well, you know, Mariota worked with Mularkey and can continue to build on his system. Well, yeah, that's going to be great until 1 or 2 years from now when you're doing this whole process all over again, and then Mariota has to learn a completely new system, and you're slowing him down, and your roster's already terrible. They botched this big time. They really did. I hate bashing hires. I like to be optimistic with a lot of these hires, but this is just uninspiring.
No, I'm with you. It just doesn't make much sense. There's no real upside here of doing that. Like you mentioned, I mean, it's really strange too. Whatever happened to the days of when you could hire a coach, or you have a coach, you draft the rookie quarterback, and then you give that coach 3 or 4 years to figure it out with that quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, there's literally no stability now when you draft a rookie quarterback, which is unbelievable to me. That's absolutely astonishing to me.
Yep. Yeah, especially in the case of Ken Wisenhunt. He gets to work with Mariota for, 7 weeks before he gets canned?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's crazy. That's crazy. And even Jameis Winston, who did well, and again, like I've said it before, I'm just going to keep saying it so people understand that I was all for firing Lovie Smith. I mean, it's still kind of messed up, though, that like he had a good – like Jameis Winston had a good season, and you get rid of the head coach. I just – as a potential head coach, I don't like the look of that, even if it was the right decision.
Yeah, so, I mean, unfortunately, it looks like another lost season in Tennessee for 2016. And you know one guy who I think is really kicking himself now? Doug Marrone.
Yeah, you know, interesting guy, man. Like, he, I don't know if it was just his agent or what, why he was such a hyped name, but really intriguing. Really intriguing stuff with him, because he was the hot name that was honestly kind of random throughout this process. And so, you know, we heard, oh, yeah, Doug Marrone's going to walk away with a head coaching job. Well, he ended up not getting a head coaching job, even though he interviewed for a couple. So really interesting stuff there. I'm not sure really what happened, but it'll be interesting to see moving forward if he's still like a hot name next off season.
But yeah, I mean, he walked away from the Bills head coaching job. I mean, he was getting paid $4 million from the Bills either way. But I mean, he was coming off a 9-7 season, you know, was really starting to turn the Bills around, nearly got them to the playoffs, took a gamble on himself. I mean, obviously, again, this is hindsight talking, but I mean, really took a gamble on himself. And he has really crapped out. You know, he went from being a head coach to an offensive line coach. And he couldn't even land the job in Tennessee, which, like you said, should have been a really attractive job, and end up having to settle for Mike Mularkey. If Doug Marrone couldn't beat up Mike Mularkey for a head coaching job, that tells you all you need to know about where he stands in the NFL coaching ranks.
Yeah, and there was a horror story, too. I think it was Marcel Darius that said something about Marrone, how Marrone, he would ride players for even just, like, wearing, like, a sweater indoors. Like, that's not how you lead. That's not how you get the attention and keep the locker room of grown men. It's, like, the exact opposite of what you really want to do to make sure that you're winning the locker room. So, just some kind of scary stuff, like, when you hear that. It's like, you know, this guy really didn't know what he was doing, did he? So I guess maybe it's not surprising, but he did do a good job with Buffalo. In the 1 year he was there, he did a better job than Rex Ryan. So I thought maybe that would warrant a look, but clearly that there's something there that we don't know about, or, you know, maybe we do know about now, that's explaining why this guy is not getting any opportunities.
Real quick, too, I want to go back to Tennessee. There was a report the other day saying, the new GM saying, you know, they're willing to trade or whatever, I guess, the number one pick. I mean, it's not surprising they're saying that in January. You know, this is the time where you're going to, you know, say stuff that's going to kind of stir the pot a little bit and get people talking, maybe get teams thinking a little bit. So it should come as no surprise that they're coming out and saying that, you know, the number one pick, you know, of course teams are going to listen to offers. And Tennessee should, you know, if they get an offer for the number one pick, they should at least consider it. I mean, they're obviously not going to take a quarterback. And we've talked about how quarterback feels kind of top heavy, at least, you know, with the draft this year. By the way, apparently I missed the Carson Wentz hype train going off the rails the other day.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
And I found out how it started, I guess, from Daniel Jeremiah. And he's a guy I respect a lot. You know, I love DJ. But I'm guessing that's the source of where this all started, with DJ mocking Wentz 4th overall to the Dallas Cowboys. I'm like, boy, if Jerry Jones pulls that trigger, wow.
Yeah, to be honest, I love Dana Jeremiah. Awesome guy on Twitter. Totally a fan of him. But I think that this is just one of those instances of, like, kind of like that random guy jumping up. I mean, we go through these cycles every year. At first there was that Connor Cook hype. There was that Jared Goff hype. There was that Paxton Lynch hype. And now we're on the last one of the big four. We're on the Carson Wentz hype. And eventually I think we'll probably cycle to another quarterback. It's just kind of how it goes for whatever reason. And this happens every year. I swear it happens every year. And, you know, Wentz is a nice prospect. There are certain things I like about him. He's big. He's mobile. He's got a good arm, not a fantastic arm. He really struggles on deep balls for whatever reason, even though he's got a stronger arm than any of the other top four quarterbacks. He's got the strongest arm of the bunch. He doesn't throw downfield well, very inaccurate there. Just puts a lot of air under the ball for no reason. There's some mechanical issues there, which is understandable. He's only started a year and a half. He has 620 career passes, which should be a pretty big red flag. Played at the FCS level. So he was, you know, Division I AA, as they like to say. So, I mean, you know, the level of competition's low. The team did perfectly fine without him. The team before him had won three straight national championships with Brock Jensen, and Brock Jensen couldn't even cut it in the NFL as a backup. So, I mean, there's a lot of red flags there. I mean, it's way too big of a risk to take him in the top 15 picks. I have him as a high third rounder, which is, for me, is developmental player, but with a good upside to be a starter. I think he can be a quality starter in proper time, but he's going to need 2 or 3 years. And I think that's okay. You know, and everyone's value is different too. You know, what I say is a third rounder might mean something different to the next guy. Some guy might think that that's, you know, a much different or a much lower ranking than what I do. For me, it's a compliment. For me, it's a starter potential in a couple of years. Lance Zierlein agrees with me, but from NFL.com. But then again, Matt Miller has Carson Wentz top 10 overall. I think he has him as like his number 7 prospect. So very subjective. He's probably the guy with the biggest range of the quarterbacks I've seen. You know, I'm more of a Goff guy myself. I have him as a top 5 pick, top 5 value. I think he's going to be a franchise quarterback. You know, one of those top 10, top 15 quarterbacks in the NFL with potential to be better. So that would be my pick if I was the Cowboys. But yeah, it was a little surprising. It'll be really interesting to see what the fallout will be, because now it sets Wentz up in a really bad spot, because he's going to do well in Mobile. I think he's going to do well in Mobile, Alabama, and I think he's going to do well against the wind, against the 7-on-7 passing drills. I mean, most quarterbacks should look good like that, and if they don't, that's a red flag. But he should look good there. The interesting part now is if the Cowboys pass on him 4th overall, which I think that they will. I don't think that they're going to take Wentz there. It'll be interesting to see the narrative that builds, when in reality I think that people are just inflating Carson Wentz's draft stock for whatever reason.
And it brings up an interesting question. Who's going to be this year's Tom Savage?
Well, I mean, it might be the quarterback that's there in Mobile, and that would be Jacob Coker from Alabama. I mean, the fact that he's even there is, quite frankly, a little embarrassing. But we know that there's a clear bias from that staff that builds that roster to local players. Mm-hmm. They've really admitted as much as on Twitter.
Yeah,
and it's did. You know, it's for the local poll. And, I mean, I guess that makes sense. To be honest with you, I don't think it would make that big of a difference if they didn't pull an Alabama kid for quarterback, because, you know, Phil Savage had bragged one day on Twitter that, you know, they had every Alabama quarterback minus, I think, one or two in the time that the Senior Bowl has been there. And, you know, to me, it's like you're really missing out on better players. You know, he's not a guy – I'm not even evaluating him for the draft. I've seen him 3 or 4 games. I don't need to study him. I can just tell you he's not an NFL quarterback. He's not a guy that's going to be in the game and actually play. And if he is playing, it's going to be a disaster. There's a lot more guys that should be in that game. Jake Rudock is one from Iowa. Trevon Boykin is a guy I wouldn't mind seeing there. Jacoby Brissett is a guy I wouldn't mind seeing there. Vernon Adams – although he's too small to probably play quarterback in the NFL, he's still a fun player. I mean, there's a lot of guys. It's a deep quarterback draft, especially for teams that need backups, and a lot of teams need backups. I was looking through depth charts a couple weeks ago, and I was like, oh, man, like 10 teams could use, like, an upgrade for the backup quarterback position, and there's value to that on day three. That's a developmental pick. That's an investment that you should make. It's a cheap backup for, you know, the next decade if you get the right backup. So I'm interested to see how many guys get drafted. I'm going to probably have like 10 to 15 guys as draftable to varying levels, and most of them are developmental types. But again, I'm all about taking your shot. I'm all about taking a quarterback every year or every other year and just hoping, you know, maybe one of these guys works out to be a franchise quarterback, because you just never know. You know, the franchise quarterbacks kind of come out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. If you look at the resumes from the top 7 or 8 quarterbacks in the league, they're pretty mixed. Some guys were day 2 picks. Some guys were day 3 picks. Some guys were undrafted, like Tony Romo. And most of them are first rounders, but there's enough random guys in there sprinkled in to tell you that we just can't predict who's going to become a great quarterback. We can just take our best guess.
And yeah, so for next week, it'll definitely be interesting to talk about the Senior Bowl and some of the quarterbacks that are down there and whatever else we talk about. Again, we'll keep it a secret for now who we're bringing in, but hopefully things work out. He is able to call in next week, so it'll be fun. I also want to throw in quick, too, there's some historic news today in the NFL. The Buffalo Bills hired Catherine Smith as a special teams quality control coach. She becomes the first full-time female NFL coach. So congratulations to Catherine, and good looks by the Buffalo Bills.
Fantastic.
Absolutely. It's really good to see females becoming more of a presence in the NFL. You know, he started with Sarah Thomas as a full-time referee this year. You had Jen Welter as the intern coach for the Cardinals in the preseason. And now you have a full-time NFL assistant coach, full-time female assistant coach. So, big props there to the Bills, and again, congrats to Kathleen. So a little bit of a happy news, I guess, to kind of end on there.
Definitely. Really hope it ends well, and we continue to see that influx.
Absolutely. And who knows? Maybe down the line, we see a female head coach. You know, it's certainly not out of the realm of possibility now.
It's so hard to imagine, but it's a really exciting thing. Just to think about that's even a possibility now. But it really is incredible.
Absolutely. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes. So, like I said, I think that was a nice, happy way to end the show. Any final words for the hopefully happy viewers out there now?
No, not really. Just stay safe and get ready for a great weekend of football.
Absolutely. Yep. Final Four, football style. Obviously, it's not college basketball Final Four, but it's certainly very exciting nonetheless. Boys, college basketball has been really crazy. A lot of upsets. It's been real fun. So if your bracket gets completely busted in March, don't worry, because everybody's bracket's probably going to be a complete mess in a couple months. It's going to be absolutely insane. I'm still waiting for a 16 seed to beat a 1. It will happen. I'm so confident. Well, I just feel it in my body that it's going to happen one of these years. Mark my words. A 16 one of these years will beat a 1 seed. But yeah, so enjoy the Final Four in the NFL. Like we said, we'll have someone coming on next week. We'll be talking Senior Bowl. Which is definitely exciting. By the way, are you going to check out the Shrine game this weekend?
Yeah, I surely will. Our guy Jeff Risden is there, and he's been providing great coverage of the Shrine game. I will definitely be checking it out. I highly encourage people to watch as well. There's a guy, Victor Ochi, from Stony Brook. He's a pass rusher. this kid could be like the next John Brown as far as like small school studs. So I'm really interested in watching him.
There you go. A little bit of a tidbit there for you guys. Shrine Game Saturday. Yeah, next week we'll be previewing the Senior Bowl, talking some of the practices, and then certainly recapping the Final Four and getting ready for Super Bowl 50. It's hard to believe. Next week, we're talking about the final game of the season, because, again, no one cares about the Pro Bowl. So until next time, for Ian Warren, I'm Bill Rossetti. Thanks so much, as always, for listening. Really appreciate it. Appreciate the support. And we'll catch you guys next week right here on GG. Take care, everybody.